Hey, so welcome back to the Lighthouse London podcast. We are back. It's been a little while since we've been doing some stuff internally. Had Patent Libraries recently, but we've got another member of the team in today. This is Anthony.
Hello.
Hey. So Anthony is a developer here at Lighthouse. But recently we held an event which we called Crash Course in Starting an Online Business, in which we got a bunch of people come down and learn about the ways that we approach helping startups and entrepreneurs get going on their entrepreneurial journey. So as well as me doing a little talk, we got some of the members of the team to come down, and Anthony actually came along and did a really great talk about Porter's Five Forces, which is something I'd not heard of before. So we thought it'd be a good idea to get him in the studio today to talk a bit more about that and give you listeners at home a breakdown of what the five forces are and how you can use that in your startup. So why don't you give us a kind of introduction to the five forces. Sure. and talk about your little spin on it to do with how you've adapted it for startups.
Okay, so to start with, the five forces was originally a framework designed by an economist at Harvard.
Cool.
In the kind of like late 80s. Now, what he designed is these five forces to understand what the competitive dynamics of an industry. So in a nutshell, we're kind of saying, what are the five major forces that affect things like profitability in any given industry?
Cool.
So might sound a bit complicated, but it acts as, for startups, it's a great way to start thinking about some of the kind of more business aspect of your startup and trying to find out, you know, what are the problems with that you might encounter with your supply chain as you grow, you know, how are you going to be able to price your products or services. It can get you thinking. It's a great thought exercise to get you thinking about more than just the idea. It's going to get you thinking about how you can actually execute on the idea as well.
Yeah, I definitely remember when you were doing the talk that I thought it was really interesting, because a lot of startups get focused on their idea, and that's really important, and obviously that's a major part of it, but these like key five things to think about were like the bigger picture business stuff, and
because
it comes from that background of like big business and all that.
Yeah, definitely.
Really, really nice exercise to run through, which I think can be understood by anyone really as well.
Yeah, exactly.
That's important to keep track on when you're starting a new venture.
I mean, yes, the kind of thing you can do on the back of a napkin. It can take 5 minutes, but it can really help you understand like, you know, what are the problems you might encounter.
And definitely where some of the biggest challenges might be that you hadn't even thought of before.
Definitely.
So getting to those kind of risk ideas quite quickly was a nice thing that I think came out of that. So is it worth just going over the five forces in like a bit of detail first, and then we can maybe come on later to how you might apply that to a startup idea to show people an example of using it?
Yeah, definitely. So the five key forces in his original paper was barriers to entry. The second was threat of substitutes. Following that is the bargaining power of suppliers, the bargaining power of buyers,
mm-hmm.
and then the industry rivalry. So, I mean, if we just start with the first one, which is barriers to entry.
Yeah.
So when you think of barriers to entry into any given industry, some have like very high barriers and some are very low. Like mm-hmm. with tech at the moment, you've got easy access to things like, you know, really powerful software tools,
mm-hmm.
whether you're doing 3D graphics or just web development, making web apps, it's extremely easy, the really low barriers to entry.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about other industries, things like real estate or pharmaceuticals, incredibly high barriers to entry.
Definitely.
And that explains why they're so high profit. The big pharma is a really high profit industry simply because it's very difficult for you to get into that industry.
Yeah, a lot of investment needed before you can start getting money back out of
Definitely.
It, but the rewards are huge.
Yeah, you need highly qualified staff, lab equipment, etc. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's barriers to entry.
Mm-hmm.
The second one was a threat of substitutes.
Yep.
So what substitutes are is substitutes aren't necessarily you know, competitive products. Like you could say Ford is a substitute of like Toyota.
Mm-hmm.
A substitute is a completely different product, but fundamentally accomplishes the same task as yours. So a great one would be for an airline, you could say trains would be a great substitute.
Yep.
It's different, gets you from A to B, so is cars. But then they can also be a bit more abstract. You can say things like Skype, you know. Mm-hmm. If you run a business in New York, you don't need to fly to London to do a business meeting. You can just do that via Skype.
Yeah, I mean, that's changed business a lot, that kind of
definitely.
Stuff, definitely over the past decade or so.
So the substitutes aren't necessarily competitors in the market. It can be things completely different products, but they fundamentally accomplish that same goal. The third force is the bargaining power of suppliers.
Yep.
So the bargaining power of suppliers is basically getting you to think about how much power do your suppliers have over you. Are there lots of suppliers for the products that you need to do your business? Or are there only one supplier? Think about things like oil, things like OPEC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They act as basically a cartel, and they set the price of oil.
Mm-hmm.
Other industries like things like diamonds, Boodles and De Beers, they can dominate the diamond market,
yeah,
or the diamond supply. So that's why they set the diamond prices.
Yeah, yeah. But in web design, there's a lot of web design companies, so...
That's true. But the great thing about the five forces is that when we look at some of the other companies, you'll see that having an understanding of the five forces, even if they are all against you, it doesn't mean that it's not a great industry to go into.
Sure.
So things like Apple would be a great example of that.
Mm.
Okay, so the fourth of the forces is bargaining power of the buyers. Now, if you think of industries like the airline industry, where you have complete market transparency, you can go on websites like Skyscanner or Trivago,
mm-hmm.
and you can instantly compare flights across all the carriers and find out the cheapest flight. There's incredibly high market transparency. Now, the bargaining power of the buyers is a big impact to your profitability.
Of course.
So things like airlines, for example, incredibly low profitability industry, because if you're flying to New York, it really doesn't matter who you're flying with. It doesn't matter if you're flying with KLM or American or BA. Really, if you're price sensitive, or if your buyers are price sensitive, you're just going to pick the lowest flight. It doesn't really matter who you fly
with. And there's so many tools out there for that customer to get the cheapest price available, and everyone's really fixated on price in that market, really.
Definitely, yeah. It's an industry, especially where there's incredibly high buying power,
mm-hmm.
and it's an incredibly homogenous product.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter who you fly with. But again, you can also have incredibly low buyer power. If you think about, again, things like pharmacies, another reason why that's such a high profitability industry is you really don't have very much power.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the only products I can think of where, in fact, you have next to no power, in the sense that if your doctor prescribes you a drug, you have very little options.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's it, right?
Unless you can do like homeopathic solutions perhaps, you know,
maybe
like,
slightly different in the States, but certainly in the UK, that's something where we don't really have any transparency about what decisions are being made there, and you're given what you're given.
Yeah. So when you think about the buyer power of buyer in pharmacy case, they've got almost negative power, where if a doctor says take this, you take it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So the final of the five forces is industry rivalry. Now, what this is getting you to think about what are the competitive dynamics in your industry. At one end of the scale is a price war,
mm-hmm.
which is a downward spiral that's bad for everyone except the buyer, where people are actually cutting prices, reducing profitability to attract business. But then you have, on the other end of the spectrum, you have what we technically call friendly competition.
Mm-hmm.
Now, friendly competition, if you think about brands like Rolex or Breitling or any of the luxury watch manufacturers, they're definitely in a state of friendly competition.
Yeah.
You'll never get Rolex saying 20% off next week, you know? If anything, it's like the opposite, where they're actually trying to increase the price to make them more exclusive.
Yeah, yeah.
So industry rivalry is it's a very big spectrum, you know? Mm. There's a lot of different ways you can interpret industry rivalry. And in some cases, especially, you know, again, with things like airlines, you might have a high-priced airline, typically like Emirates or BA,
mm-hmm.
who are in a more friendly competition state. And then you've got other flights like Ryanair, Aer Lingus, EasyJet, which are typically...
picking up at the bottom.
Yeah, right. So they're cutting prices everywhere they can to try and attract that business. So industry rivalry, so it's a very big spectrum, but that's a really key one about profitability and how you're going to kind of market your product to your customers.
Hey, this is Laura from Lighthouse. Our product sprints are the perfect way to get ideas validated and in front of customers in just a few days. To find out more, head over to wearelighthouse.com/product sprint.
I think most people probably understand if you run through those five things, you can learn quite a lot about whether you should go into this market, what your problem areas might be, or even what kind of options are open to you in terms of how you market yourself or what sort of product you want to bring to market.
Mm.
So I think it'd be quite cool to maybe run through an example, maybe like a real world example of a kind of a startup or a business that people know quite well. and just measure it up against those forces so we can get like a just a big picture of how you'd use them in practice. So I know you had an example that we talked through at the events. It's probably worth doing that one, right?
Sure. So yeah, we did Deliveroo as an example at the event that we did. Really because that's the stuff which a lot of people in London use.
Yeah, yeah.
And also there are barriers to entry, and there are some really negative some of the forces are quite against you in that industry. But it doesn't mean that it's a completely unprofitable industry.
Cool. I'm going to try and play the role of the audience for this.
So you play the role of the audience and I'll play me. Okay, so if we think about the barriers to entry, I mean, what kind of barriers could you foresee as something like Deliveroo, or if you were going to create your own, say, delivery service, similar to Deliveroo or Uber Eats?
Yeah, I mean...
What would you say those are?
The barriers to entry are quite obvious ones. I mean, they need a fleet of people to deliver your stuff, so that's a massive one. Like, having the workforce needed to trust and take people's food to their doors is quite huge.
Mm-hmm.
You've also got to have relationships with restaurants, the sort of thing that, you can't just get overnight. I suppose you need the tech as well. So there's like a big part of the apps, the website, that kind of thing that falls under that.
That's a great point you bring up there with regard to the apps and technology, is that when you're thinking about your barriers to entry for your startup or your online business, it's great to think about how you can actually use them in your benefit, right?
Yeah.
So when you think about things like the apps and the kind of customer service that you're given through the technology that they've got, i.e. the back-end systems for giving orders to the restaurants and the app in the experience that the customer has on their phone, by creating the best experience possible for Uber Eats or Deliveroo, what they're actually doing is actually raising those competitive barriers up.
Sure.
So if people are getting used to having an extremely seamless, very user-friendly experience on their iPhone, that's going to deter them from trying perhaps a newer startup who has a slightly less developed back end or has a less developed kind of system for giving those orders out.
Certainly in that industry, isn't it? Because that's the sort of thing, you're hungry, you just want some food to turn up, you're lazy, you're sitting on your sofa.
Exactly.
That's really important for a lot of those customers. Obviously, it'll be different businesses have different needs, but that works really well for Deliveroo, definitely. Yeah.
So like the more you develop those systems, and the better you make those systems with from taking orders to actually executing on the order and delivering it, the better you make that, the harder you're making it for new competitors to come into that market and try and replicate it, because you've had the experience, you managed to learn how to produce the best
system. Yeah, definitely.
So the next one will be threat of substitutes. So what substitutes do you think there are for Deliveroo?
I mean, the traditional ones, right? Or the cooking.
Yeah, exactly.
It's falling out of favour, it seems, in the world.
Seems to be, yeah.
But going to a restaurant. Going out, and you might have one around the corner, you might go uptown or whatever to a nice restaurant, but that's a definite competition.
Definitely. So when you think about those, there are really only two that I can really think of, which would be, one, going to the restaurant itself.
Yeah.
Which can be hugely attractive. If you think about, you're going to have a better experience, you're going to be able to have the food served, the ambiance, whatever that is.
Yeah, definitely.
So there's there's quite a bit of attraction for the restaurant still.
Mm.
But then also you've got just cooking at home.
Yeah.
You've got the idea of being able to say, I want to cook this how I want it.
Yeah.
You can put the ingredients in yourself, you can choose what you want. And also you've got the idea of saying, I know what I'm putting in this food.
Yeah, that health option potentially is
exactly
the big thing there. I suppose you've got the your local Indian takeaway, your local Chinese takeaway as well. Uh-huh. But I suppose the reason why that isn't as good is because you don't get the choice that you get through something like Deliveroo.
Yeah.
Still turns up at your door, but you couldn't choose like every food under the sun.
Yeah.
You just got one option.
So, I mean, with threat substitutes, I mean, what I would attempt to do to try and mitigate those substitutes is I'll start thinking about, so if there are people who are interested in maybe a more premium service, i.e. that they would expect from going to the restaurant, maybe there's a more premium service that you could offer to deliver the food, i.e. it maybe comes to someone better presented, or perhaps there's a more professional service you can do to deliver the food.
Yeah.
And then again, on the other end, for people who choose to cook, maybe there's things that you could offer in terms of maybe having a healthy section.
Yeah.
Where if people are saying, I'm choosing not to use Deliveroo because I'm health conscious, perhaps there's a way there that you can say, right, if you're health conscious, we have a new health section of Deliveroo.
Showing what's in the menus, having detailed information about what goes in, that kind of stuff.
Things like allergy information.
Yeah, yeah.
The kind of fat content, calorie content, etc. of each meal, each serving. That could be a great way to attract new customers and kind of get them to not cook for themselves.
Definitely.
The third of the forces is bargaining power of suppliers.
Yeah, so that's the restaurants and stuff.
That's
right?
Definitely, yeah, it's going to be the restaurants.
So yeah, I think they've got a relatively high bargaining power, but also I suppose it depends on what they've got already. So yeah. If they've got like a good home delivery business that exists, then they might not need to use that service.
Yeah.
But if they don't, then they would be calling out for a service like Uber Eats or Deliveroo. Yeah. So there's a bit of both to that.
Yeah, definitely. I think it'd also be important to consider like your workforce.
Mm.
I'm not completely sure on Deliveroo, but I know that recently Uber have had to actually consider their employees
yeah.
and not third-party contractors.
Yeah, of course.
So your workforce in that instance is going to be quite important to keep in mind,
yeah.
i.e. how are you not only going to pay them, but if they are full-time employees, how are you going to give them employee benefits, yeah. sick pay, etc. So they're quite important factors. For mitigating the power of suppliers, I mean, the only thing that I can really think you can do in that instance is simply just become more important to the restaurant's business, right?
Yeah.
So if a restaurant can typically only serve, say, 100 people in any given night,
mm-hmm.
if Deliveroo can provide another revenue stream for them and say they can provide another 100% capacity from like their orders, what you'll find is that the supply power will be reduced quite heavily.
Yeah, I see that quite a lot in my local area. There's small restaurants that have like a small number of tables, but obviously can cook more food. So Deliveroo, I think, and Uber Eats are good at making them massively increase their capacity of what they can push out and then sell.
Definitely. So that would be a great way to reduce that bargaining power of suppliers. Fourth is a bargaining power of the buyer.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what would you say for that?
Is that one quite high?
I would say it's relatively high because there is quite a bit of transparency there in the sense that you have Uber Eats who are in a kind of price war with Deliveroo.
Mm. Yeah, and also like I suppose you do pay for Deliveroo as well as a buyer.
Yeah,
which is something that probably would put people off. So certainly, if it's like going out to a restaurant is different to eating in your house. So you probably still would want to go to a restaurant,
uh-huh.
but ordering from your local takeaway, they generally don't charge you. So there probably would be quite a decision around that, whether you want to pay the £2.50 or whatever it is for the.
Yeah, I would kind of put it perhaps in the medium category, purely because there is some level of transparency there. Uber Eats especially, or Uber are particularly good at setting up things like things called switching costs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a really great way to actually mitigate any bargaining power of the buyer is switching costs.
Yeah.
With switching costs, what can you do to stop somebody from switching to another supplier, right? Mm-hmm. So if we think about something like Adobe software, right?
Mm-hmm.
For a long time in the web development industry, it's been the industry standard for exchanging designs, right?
Yeah.
And it's been quite difficult to switch because not only is it industry standard, there's also quite a strong learning curve associated with that.
Definitely.
So once you've learned your workflow for actually doing designs, and then developers can are used to actually using those designs using the Adobe suite as well, there's a high switching cost to move towards Sketch or any other.
You have to install software, you've got to work it out.
There's money associated with it as well, right? So what Uber Eats have done is they have a quite a good scheme where they give out you can order for free there,
mm-hmm.
which is a great kind of switching cost because they can say, right, order with us and get free food, right?
Yeah.
And that's gonna then deter you from then saying, right, I'll use Uber Eats.
Yeah.
And that's a great reason why we have loyalty schemes with any company.
Yeah.
It's saying, you've built up all these points with us, why change?
Why would go and use somewhere else? Because you've got all this stuff you can redeem with us. Yeah, definitely. It's the keeping people on board. And I think that way that Uber did that with cabs as well. You get £10 free ride. And I know when I first got that, I was like, wow, I'm riding for free. This is great. It's a very good way to pull people in. And once you're in, people generally stick around if the experience is good.
Hi, this is Dan. I head up strategy here at Lighthouse. We found that one of the main problems our clients faced was generating and filtering great product ideas. We came up with the Innovation Day to show them that those ideas were lying all around their organization. They just had to look for them. If you want to run an Innovation Day, go to wearelighthouse.com/service/Innovation Day.
And then the fifth and final would be, again, industry rivalry. So what do you think industry rivalry, would you say, is? What do you think industry rivalry
is? Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it quite a lot already. So yeah. Uber and Deliveroo are definitely big rivals, and they're both massive. So there's huge rivalry there.
Yeah, definitely. I would say that it's pretty high. And I think that there is room in the market for two suppliers.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be a monopoly. But I think that industry rivalry is going to get to the point, or has already gone past the point, in which it's going to be easy for new people to enter that market.
Yeah.
If you wanted to set up a new delivery service, the industry rivalry is so high that I think that to get that economies of scale that they've got, you're going to need a lot of funding to get started.
Yeah.
There's going to have to be a lot of systems put in place, which I think, the industry rivalry with the delivery services like Deliveroo and Uber Eats, I think that's pretty damn high.
Yeah, I think you'd really struggle to access direct competition with those guys. But you see lots of kind of food startups and all that kind of thing that do something slightly different.
Yeah.
The focus on health and all that kind of thing. But certainly competing on that level, I think you please don't anyone at home try and do that. It's a really bad idea.
That said, I mean, if you want to have to pay us to make your website.
Yeah, of course. But if you do need to...
My email address is...
So that's cool. I think that is that everything, right?
Yeah, that's everything.
Cool. So I think that sums up really nicely a kind of real world example of how you'd put the five forces in practice. And obviously, I think if you're listening and you can tell that it's quite flexible and works well across any business type. And like you said, when you start out, even if everything comes out bad or you're negative on some of the things, doesn't mean you shouldn't pursue that idea. But it's a good way to sort of like manage risk and be aware of what issues you might face or need to overcome with various solutions that you come up with. So that's awesome. Thanks for filling us in on that. Definitely going to have you back in to do some more. For everyone out there, we'll be running more events for entrepreneurs and startup founders to come down to learn more about how we build and manage products. Stay tuned for that. There'll be more podcasts coming later. Go over to the blog to have a look. wearelighthouse.com/blog. You can sign up to our newsletter as well there to keep up to date with all our information. Follow us on Twitter at @wearelighthouse. If you want to drop us an email, hello@wearelighthouse.com.
That's the one.
Until next time, catch you later.
Cheers.